Forward to Section 11. This strange and haunting section has generated endless discussion, and Whitman's emphasis on the number 28 has particularly fascinated critics from the poet's time to our own. Some have argued that Whitman was suggesting the number of states in the Union. And while there were 28 states in 1845 when Texas was admitted, Iowa became a state in 1846, Wisconsin in 1848, and California in 1850. So when Whitman wrote this section, there were in fact 31 states. Other critics have suggested that Whitman is evoking the lunar cycle, popularly thought of as 28 days, though actually between 29 and 30 days. Still others have suggested associations with Egyptian mythology, which Whitman had studied in some detail. Osiris was killed in the 28th year of his reign, and his body, by various accounts, was divided into 14 or 26 or 28 parts before being recovered by Isis, thus associating him with the lunar cycle. Others associate the 28-ness of this section with the menstrual cycle. All of these associations thus relate to fertility, union, birth, and regeneration, things that have eluded the lonesome woman. But whatever, if anything, Whitman meant to suggest by the number 28, he certainly does create in this section more crossings and boundaries, this time boundaries of class and gender. The woman is wealthy, the owner of a fine house positioned on a rise above the rest of her community, from which she is separated by layers of richness, from her dress to her blinds. But this material comfort has isolated rather than truly comforted her, and her aching desire, built up over 28 years, now reaches through her insulated walls, through her blinds, through social conventions, and through her clothing, out to a group of rough young men, one for every year of her lonely life, who cavort naked in the river below her. Reversing the usual poles of Western voyeurism, where men have secretly watched naked women, as in the biblical story of David and Bathsheba or Susanna and the elders, and putting aside the guilt usually associated with such acts, in this section, the woman engages in the joyful erotics of hidden looking. And just as she imagines herself released from all her constraints as she joins the men, becoming the 29th bather, in a naked ecstasy of touching, so the male poet, watching her, becomes by implication the 30th bather, imaginatively joining in the free-flowing frolic as well. And so are we, the readers, male or female, gay or straight, invited to become the 31st bather, riding the trajectory of the lonely woman's desire out into the fluid world of democratic touch, where the constraints of gender and social conventions are momentarily cast aside. Gender itself evaporates as the young men's bellies bulge as if pregnant, and the descriptive phrase pendant and bending arch adheres equally to aspects of both male and female anatomy. It is Whitman's lesson in how the imagination is a democratic force that can carry us across the barriers of religion, morality, conventions, class, even sexual orientation, and test the waters of indiscriminate thinking.